Well, good to see you all, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. All right, we are actually beginning the second paragraph of the Shema. Last week we spoke about the last sentence regarding the mezuzah, and this time we're moving into the second paragraph. Just as a reminder, there are three paragraphs in the Shema. I don't know what Sidur you're accustomed to. I don't know which is the prayer book you like, but I remember as a kid growing up, and when I looked at the Shema, the way my Siddur had it was in four paragraphs. And that is 100% incorrect. There are only three. A printer somewhere along the line took the last sentence from the paragraph number two. Maybe he ran out of space. I don't know. But he put the Laman Yirbu Yemecha. I don't know if you have it as a third. I'm sure Art Scroll does not. They fixed that mistake, but there are only three paragraphs. The first one is the Shema, beginning with V'ahavta. The second begins the one we have now, V'haya im Shamoa, and it will come to pass that if you listen to my commandments, etc. And then the third one is the paragraph that begins, and Hashem said to Moshe regarding, speak to the children of Israel about the mitzvah of tzitzis. Those are the three paragraphs. So just make a mental note as we come to the end of paragraph number two that it really does not end where some prayer books have it. So we'll get there at some point. As way of introduction, the second paragraph of Shema differs in focus than the first. The first, I mentioned it in a previous class, the first is known as Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim. It is an acceptance of the yoke of God's sovereignty of the universe. Ol Malchut Shamayim, Ol means a yoke. Malchut means kingdom. Shamayim means of heaven. It's an acceptance of God's sovereignty of the world. However, paragraph number two that I'm going to read, if you have it in front of you, great. It doesn't focus on that. It's a totally different focus. Let me read it to you for those who don't have it. And for Candy, I'm going to repeat it twice because you're in two places. Okay, fine. And it will come to... That's the problem when you have a class so late at night. I'm already kidding. And it will come to pass that if you continually hearken to my commandments that I command you today, to love Hashem your God and to serve him with all your heart, with all your soul, then I will provide rain for your land in its proper time, the early and late rains, that you may gather in your grain, your wine, and your oil. I will provide grass in your field for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. Beware, lest your heart be seduced and you turn astray and serve gods of others and bow to them, and the wrath of Hashem will blaze against you. He will restrain the heaven so that there will be no rain, and the ground will not yield its produce. And you will swiftly be banished from the goodly land which Hashem gives you. Place these words of mine upon your heart and upon your soul. Bind them as a sign upon your arm and let them be for tefillin between your eyes. Teach them to your children, to discuss them while you sit in your home, while you walk on the way, when you lay down and when you arise. And write them on the doorposts of your house and upon your gates, in order to prolong your days and the days of your children upon the ground that Hashem has sworn to your ancestors to give them, like the days of the heaven on the earth. Sounds vaguely familiar to you?
Still not the same, is that?
Great. You'll note for those who were following where I stopped, as far as the end of the second paragraph. Do all of you have that as the end of the second? Oh, yes? No?
No.
Anybody? Does anybody who's not have it that way?
On the earth.
Probably most of you are probably using more modern printings, so it probably has corrected that mistake. But, you know, you'll see when you guys get to be my age, you'll see. There's stuff that I learned way back when you guys were still young pup. Okay.
This one or this one?
Yeah, my glasses.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. I want to go back a little bit. Let's see if you can just, even if you didn't have it in front of you, if you had to pick a couple of key words or themes that struck you about this paragraph, what would you say? Does not a trick question yet.
Teach it to your children.
Okay, that's true. I did say that at the end, but there's like lots and lots of discussion way before that sentence.
Follow the commandments.
Good. Follow the commandments. Sandy, I'm going to push you harder. Why?
So that you have the rain.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. It's almost setting you up that if you do this, it's like, you know, Boolean algebra. If this, then that. Right? Those of you in computers, right? All the nested loops. If this, then that. Go to line 5. So if you hearken to my commandments, then Hashem says, I will promise to give you the rain at the right time, early and late. You'll have grass in the field for your cattle. You'll be able to gather in your grain, your wine, your oil. You'll eat and be satisfied. However, big neon flashing lights. However, if you do not follow my commandments and you decide to stray and follow gods of others, then I will hold back my rain. I will hold back the goodness and you will be banished from the land that Hashem has promised you. And the wrath of God will come. This entire paragraph has to do with reward and punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Tied directly to my performance or lack of performance of the commandments. Can we agree on that? That the theme of this paragraph is, if you follow my commandments, here's the good stuff. If you stray and go and follow others, nope, then you will lose that opportunity for greatness, for goodness in your fields and everything else in the physical realm. Do we all see that? This is important because whereas the first paragraph was, as I said, known as accepting upon ourselves the sovereignty of God of the universe, this focuses on an acceptance of mitzvahs, practical observance of commandments. Why I make a big deal of this is the Talmud asks a very basic question. Why are the paragraphs ordered the way they are in our Shema? This is not the chronological order of how the paragraphs are found in the Torah. In fact, if you were to look at them, the third paragraph, which we haven't gotten to yet, comes first in the chronology of the order of the Torah. And paragraph number 2 comes next, and paragraph 1 is last. Ask the Talmud, then why is it ordered this way? There must be a logical reason why it's not following the chronology of the Torah. And the Talmud makes this point. It is absolutely impossible for a person to accept upon themselves to do mitzvos, to do commandments, if you don't first accept there's a commander. What's the point of following a commandment if you haven't acknowledged there's a commander? So the first paragraph lays the groundwork for the second. You can't tell me the importance of following and observing the commandments if I haven't first told you there's one God in the universe. Right? It's a logical conclusion. In fact, as we will go through it, you will see where that's alluded to, not just in the order, but the way things are phrased in the sentences, which we'll get to shortly. The paragraph of Shema, the first paragraph, must come before Vahaya, before our paragraph, because you have to establish the baseline. There is a God, and God has commanded us. Now let's hear what the commandments are. If you think about it, it's the same structure of the basics of Judaism. When God gave us the Ten Commandments, what's the first one? I am Hashem, your God, who took you out from the land of Egypt, from the house of slavery. Fact, there's a God. I am that God. Then comes the second, don't have any other gods, don't use my name in vain. Then you can have all the do's and don'ts you want. But the initial structure. The groundwork has to start with, there is a God and I accept that God. Now we move forward. Hence the order of the paragraphs is first Shema Yisrael, then we talk about the acceptance of the mitzvahs. Okay, we're good about this? Okay. So now comes a very important question. If you were the rabbi, you're the rabbi. You know what? We're going to switch roles tonight. I'm going to be the student and you're going to be the teacher. And I raise my hand and I say, rabbis, do we believe in reward and punishment? Does Judaism tell us that there's a concept of reward and punishment? What saith you, oh dear rabbi?
You betcha.
You betcha. Rabbi Allen says, you betcha. We believe in it. Okay, I appreciate that, teacher, rabbi. But now my question is, do I get rewarded for following the commandments in this world? If I observe Shabbos, if I observe kosher, if I observe the laws of not speaking Lashon Hara, and I do all this, am I going to be really rich? Is God going to bless me with $1 billion so that I can rebuy Twitter?
Maybe, maybe not.
What?
Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe, maybe not. That's not a very rabbinic answer that students like to hear.
Well, your reward comes in Olam Haba, in the world to come.
Oh, so comes along Rabbi Sid, and he's like, please, Alan, don't be wishy-washy. The fact of the matter is you don't get rewarded in this world. The reward is reserved for the what he called Olam Haba, the world to come. Please, silly Rabbi Alan, don't make a mockery of Judaism. No, of course not. I'm just filling in the blanks of what Sid was saying. Okay. How many of you like Sid's answer? I got Sharon. I know Sid likes it. Yeah. Sharon likes it. Candy's on board with this. Candy gets 2 votes. Okay.
However.
Oh, wait. However, Michelle cutting underneath there. Yes.
However, I think that it's not one or the other. I think that God is telling us if we live following the commandments, it's the way we're supposed to live and we'll have a good life. I mean, there's so many studies that show, you know, you take time out for Shabbos, you rest, all of these things can contribute to a positive way of living. It's not a guarantee you're going to be rich. It's not a guarantee you're not going to have any pain or any suffering, but it is the way God says we should live. So we can have a piece of
the world,
the goodness of the world to come by following the rules.
You mean goodness in this world?
Yeah.
Okay. So Rabbi Michelle wants to suggest that it could be both, but teacher, answer this. Can I make a blanket statement that if I follow the commandments, I will be rewarded in physical terms with sustenance and happiness and wealth?
No.
You wouldn't say that?
No.
That's not very appealing. That's like telling the little kid, you know what? You did such an excellent job. For your next birthday, we're going to get you. And he's like, next birthday? That's like a million years from now. But here's my bigger problem. You happen to be correct in the sense of the following. Sid said there's no reward in this world. It's all reserved for the world to come. In fact, I will help Sid a little bit here because the Talmud says explicitly there is no reward in this world for the mitzvos we do. Fact. You do not get rewarded for the mitzvos, the commandments that you observe in this world. Not here. Wait, before you jump all over me, we have a problem. We have a huge problem. Because, let's try to understand this. If I were to say the following to you, let's take the most precious, joyous moments that a person can have in their life. Thank God all of us have had happy, joyous moments. Not to say that there hasn't been difficult, challenging ones as well, but I think we, if we're honest and we're looking at a larger picture, there have definitely been moments of joy and happiness that's experienced by us. If you could take those feelings, concentrate all those moments that you experienced and add to it all of those moments in joy and happiness that your family experienced, your friends have experienced, and put it all together really into one big bundle of joy. I'm not talking about kids, grandkids. Real one big bundle of joy from all your ancestors, and I'll be even generous, all of your future descendants of all generations from creation until the end of time. And you pack it and concentrate it. And we agree that it must be an extremely intense moment of joy. Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, that extreme intense joy doesn't even measure to the satisfaction of one moment of a world to come. You say, come on, come on, come on. Come on, get real. Be serious. It's joyous. Come on. Those feelings of euphoria were just so amazing. No matter how much you take, there's nothing you can grab in this physical world to truly represent even the smallest reward for a mitzvah that you have done. There's nothing this world can contain that will measure up for one moment where you caught yourself and you wanted to say Lashon Hara and you said, no, I'm going to overcome. The reward for doing that is greater than all the intense moments of joy that this world has to offer. And that's why, Sid, the Talmud says, there can't be reward for mitzvos in this world because that you're getting shortchanged. If you're going to trade it in for $1 billion, shame on you. You sold that stock way too early because it's worth 100 million times more. Don't shortchange it. If you trade in the observance of one mitzvah for any kind of reward in this world, you got gypped. You got gypped. There's nothing this world can offer you. To think of reward in terms of worldly goods or material pleasures would be underselling the true value. With that introduction, I have just dug myself a hole that I'm not sure I can get out of. Because we just started reading the second paragraph of the Shema. And in the Shema, it makes it very clear. If you listen and hearken to all my commandments, and you follow me, and you love me, and you do everything I ask you to do, guess what? You know what I have in store? Doesn't talk about the world to come. Doesn't talk about the most incredible, intense feelings of satisfaction. No. You know what you get for following the commandments? I will provide the rains. You'll gather in your grain, your wine, your oil. You'll eat, be satisfied. With us, you'll eat again, be satisfied again. It indicates very clearly that the reward is in this world. It's a very nice speech, Rabbi, except you wasted 14 minutes of my time. I came to learn something and you're yanking my chain here. Like, come on. I got better things to do. This is a problem that the philosophers and commentators many have grappled with. I'll share one with you, and that is that of the Rambam, Maimonides. Maimonides has a very clear understanding of how to appreciate this. This paragraph of the Shema is not telling you what the reward you're going to get, but rather it is not Let me put it better. The solution is that it's a means by that it will allow you to continue the proper pursuit of serving God. I'll give you the example and I'll explain a little better. For somebody who is unfortunately poor, I mean destitute, of where they literally have to spend their day, the majority of their day, scrounging food and or money to survive. What is the likelihood that I would meet them on the street and say, oh, wow, I teach a class on Zoom. I think you'd love it. And you know what? My schedule, I'm actually teaching 8 times this week. I think you should be able to come. They're fascinating. Just ask any of these folks. They'll all tell you it's the best gig out there. Do you think this fellow is going to have the time, energy, or patience to listen to me? He can't, because he's worried and spending all of his time and energy just surviving. Says the Rambam, says Maimonides, that Hashem is telling us, if you go ahead and you fulfill the commandments and you do what you're supposed to, I'm not going to give you the reward for that in this world. That's reserved for the next world, because there's nothing I can give you that would value a true value of the observance. But you know what I will do for you? I'm going to make it that you can enjoy your life and that you can have time and energy to do the things that I ask you to do. To go to a class, to go keep Shabbos. You know what? Spend a little extra on Shabbos because you got to buy kosher and I got to take off a day of work. God says, don't worry, I got you. If you hearken to my commandments, I'll have the rains come proper time. And guess what? Your agriculture will do great. You'll have the means by which you'll say, wow, what a great season this was. I got time now because I did so well. I have time to go learn a little bit. I have the tranquility and the serenity to focus on much more important things in my life. I'm not running from thing to thing just to survive. This is how Maimonides understands the true value of this world is not to indulge in the physical pleasure, but use it as a means to further your spiritual pursuit. That's the function of the goodness of this world. See, that's the beauty of Torah. That is the real beauty. This is where we differ in many ways from other religions. We do not say that the physical world is inherently bad or inherently evil that I should not partake of. That is not the Torah's view. The Torah's view is that the physical world and the spiritual world work together. I use the physical and elevate it. I use the physical so that I can have, plain and simple, I'm supposed to eat. I'm not supposed to be fasting. If fasting was the main mode of Judaism, Yom Kippur would be every Monday and Thursday. And, you know, for some of us, that would probably add a little extra stringency, and we do it on probably Tuesday as well. But that's not the mode we're supposed to be in. We're supposed to eat. Do you know you're supposed to eat minimally twice a day? On Shabbos, you're obligated, yeah, obligated to eat 3 meals. Tell me this isn't the coolest religion ever. You're obligated to eat. Come on. Seriously. Why would a Torah, God really cares whether I eat or not? The service to God is so ephemeral. It's so, no. Serving God is by eating properly. At the right time, with the right foods, with acknowledging God. Now we're talking. Says the Rambam, Maimonides tells us that's what's going on in this paragraph. The paragraph is not telling you, if you listen, this is your reward. No, if you listen, I'll call it a bonus, but it's not a bonus. It's a natural follow that Hashem says, I'm going to give you the means to continue pursuing spiritual matters, continue observing commandments. I'm not going to make your life miserable that you're going to scrounge and have to be worried every second of the day. I'll give you the opportunity. That is a very important concept. We've spoken about it many, many times. Where's my question? Very beginning of the Torah. Where is this? Here? And Hashem, God, formed the man of the earth, right, of soil from the earth, and blew into his nostrils the soul of life. And man became a living being. Two parts to mankind, every human being. A, formed out of the dirt, formed out of earth, physical matter. But there's a second element. God blew into his nostrils a soul. There's a spiritual side to man, physical and spiritual. And what am I supposed to do about it? Just a few verses later, Hashem God took the man and placed him in the Garden of Eden. And Hashem God commanded the man, saying, quote, this is what God said, of every tree of the garden, I'll translate it the way they do, you may freely eat, but of the tree of knowledge of good and bad, you must not eat thereof. From the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. What's the commandment God said? Everybody always says it. Don't eat from the tree of good. No, that's only half right. Should I repeat it? I'm going to repeat the sentence.
Eat every tree.
Eat everything.
Yes. If this isn't, if you desire. He didn't say that. Of every tree of the garden, they translate it as you may freely eat. I don't think that's 100% accurate. And the reason I say that is because the Hebrew says, Mikol Eitz Hagan, from all the trees of the garden, Achol Tochel, you should eat. You should eat. Not if you want to, you may. If you decide to go visit the Appalachian Trail, yes, you may freely do so. No, go. I want you to eat from my garden. Just don't eat from that tree. Right? Which one is it? No, don't eat from that one. But all the others, not you may, you should. Because that is the Jewish perspective. That's the Torah perspective. We are to partake of the physical in order to reach the spiritual. We'll talk more, but Allison has a question. Please. Allison, you raise your hand. You have a question. You want me to keep going?
She's muted.
No, I'm sorry. I'm in my car and I had some technical difficulties.
No problem. No problem. But you're welcome to ask if you do have one. Okay. The example I love to use is the concept of the horse and rider, or a car and a driver. It's the same idea, depending, you know, whether you're from Frederick or Baltimore. But it's the same idea of where. Car is Frederick. Don't get excited. The car is the vehicle. The car is the mechanism by which we get from point A to point B. Can I get from point A to point B without the car? Yes, but that's kind of hard if you're going a long distance or you're going for a period of time. There's only so much I can do on my own. So God says, I'll give you a means. I'll give you a mechanism, a vehicle to allow you to go from point A to point B easier. But who's driving the machine? You should. I don't care about the autonomous cars. Still, you have to have some level of guidance over it. That's the facts. Therefore, Hashem says, I'm going to give you the physical world. That's the car. But you, the human being who has a soul, give it direction. Tell it where to go. Don't just hit cruise and let it go wherever it wants. You have to give it direction. The same thing. Go ahead, eat. Go ahead, get in a relationship, a physical relationship with somebody. There's nothing in the physical world that cannot be used and harnessed for benefit spiritually. Do you know that? There's nothing, because otherwise it wouldn't be here. There's no physical pleasure that you are being denied. None. And again, there are parameters to appreciating that pleasure. But an actual pleasure? Tell me one that we're not allowed to have. There are none. Go ahead, Alan. What? What can I have?
Leviticus chapter 19. There's a whole bunch of prohibitions on relationships. Right?
Yes, but that doesn't, I'm not saying that you can partake of every kind. The relationship means intimacy. Intimacy is 100% permitted pleasure with the right person at the right time. There is no physical pleasure category that the Torah forbids. Because otherwise, what's the point? I can eat food. I can have intimacy. I can enjoy myself. I can put on, fancy clothes. I can anoint myself with all kinds of oils. It's fine. At certain times, the Torah says, not today. Certain activities, they're fine on Sunday through Friday, but not on Shabbos. But there's no category of a pleasure that the Torah says you can't have. Because the point of physicality is to be a means to greater growth of spirituality. This applies to every aspect of our lives. As I said, every single area of daily living can be elevated. Our bodies, our homes, our relationships, our businesses, they all constitute the structure of potential holiness. Eating, make a bracha. Even mundane activities like going to the bathroom. When you're done, you make a bracha. Come on, man. Yeah. There's nothing. Drink, make kiddush. Intimacy, okay, within a Torah framework. Marriage is called kiddushin. Holiness comes from the word kadosh. Yeah. Certain times it's off limits. Certain times, okay. But there's no such thing. Every single element and material in the world can be elevated. Leather, make tefillin. Wool, make tzitzis. Grapes, make wine for kiddush. Wheat, make matzah. Water, mikvah. I can go on and on because everything in our world has to be this way within the right context. Holiness and spirituality is available to everyone in everyday life. And the more you understand the bridging of these two worlds, the more holy it is. This is how Maimonides understands this concept. We announce in the second paragraph of the Shema, not that the rains are going to come as a reward for my doing the mitzvos. That is incorrect. But rather, it is where God gives us and bestows upon us all of these goodness and blessings so that we can continue to pursue godly spiritual values and things of that nature. Is that clear? I want to make sure because this is a very important concept. If I speak up, if you have a question, really. Great. So next week you guys will give this over to someone else. Perfect. Okay. So let's explore this further. Okay, so what does it say? And it will come to pass. Let me just make sure I'm not missing anything here. Goodness, oil, constitute the focus, fine, corollary, right? Capable of this. Fine. Okay, we got all this. Okay, now let's read. And it will come to pass, and it will be, if you continually hearken to my commandments that I command you today. Now, if you remember this word today, we had in the first paragraph, same concept. Where Hashem says, right, and these words that I command you today should be on your heart. Remember that from the first paragraph? Similar idea here. If you will hearken to these mitzvahs that I command you today. Again, what do you mean? I wasn't commanded today. So if you recall from the previous class, we talked about this being a concept of living it as if it were given today with that sense of freshness and vitality. And it's not just, oh, been there, done that. Fresh, do it, doing the mitzvos, hearken to the mitzvos, listen to them with that excitement. To do what? to love Hashem, your God, and to serve him. This is the phrase I want to focus on for now. Ula avdo b'chol levavachem u'v'chol nafshachem. And to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Any questions about that? You should. To love Hashem, your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Nothing.
We get to physical and the spiritual.
Heart and soul. Okay. But you should have a question. Something should bother you about this sentence. I'll give you.
How do you serve?
What? Go ahead, Sid.
How do you serve God?
How does one serve God with the heart? What does that mean? That's a great question. That's one question. And there's a second one. If you have your Siddur in front of you, look back at the first paragraph and tell me something that sounds very similar, but different.
So you shall love him with your heart and all your soul.
You're in the first paragraph or the second?
In the first one.
Really? Try again.
And all your resources.
Oh, it's missing something. In the first paragraph, it listed how to serve God with three things. Right?
Yeah. Right. Heart, soul.
Resources.
Yeah. You shall love Hashem, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your resources. In the second paragraph, it leaves off that third piece. It only says, and to serve him with all your heart, with all your soul. What happened to your resources? So I once asked that question, and of course, one of the kids in the group raised his hand and he said, yeah, that's because you used up all your resources in the first paragraph.
I was going to say that.
But what does the Hebrew for resources mean?
B'chol me'odecha. We talked about me'odecha means that which God has given you very of. The word me'od means very. So if God has given you very much with your resources, your talents, we talked about the idea of giving back to God, even those things that are mine, so to say, not just my money and resources, but my time, my talents, all of that is being able to use to serve God. But in the literal sense, it's talking about monetary things, your possessions, to serve God with your resources. But why is that missing in the second paragraph? Those are the two main questions. Question number one is, what does it mean to serve God with our heart? And number two is, what happened to my resources? These are the two questions.
Well, it goes on to say, then I will provide rain and for your land and blah, 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 which would make their resources grow.
Correct. But that would make it even stronger of a question. This is the paragraph that says that you're going to have more resources. Then certainly I should be serving God with my resources. This is the paragraph I would more expect to find it in.
But do we really have any resources? Isn't everything what God has given us, are they really ours?
Correct. And that's why we have to serve him with those resources. Correct. That is the mentality that we use, is to say, at the end of the day, it's all a gift from God. And it's really his. And he's made me custodial over it. And, you know, I have the ability to use it properly. But at the end of the day, it's his stuff. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't that be here? So I want to tell you a very, very beautiful, beautiful insight. Number one, you can't appreciate it because of the English. But there's a major change in the Hebrew from paragraph one to paragraph two. Paragraph one is said in the singular. And you shall love Hashem your God. It says you, but in English, the word you could be both singular and plural. But in Hebrew, there's no such concept. Singular and plural are different. It's conjugated differently. The ahavta and you shall love is the singular, individual. Mm-hmm. If it was you in the plural, it would say the ahavtem. And you, all of you, should love. It's the whole first paragraph is in the singular. Immediately at the start of the second paragraph, it changes terminology to always be in the plural. If you can follow the Hebrew, you'd appreciate it more, but it doesn't come out in English. The haya, and it will be, it shall be, im shamoa tishma'u. Tishma'u is plural. You, in the plural, listen. El mitzvotai, to my commandments, that I command you, etchem, you, plural, today, to love Hashem Elokeichem. It always ends with the chem or the tem. That means them in plural, you in plural. To serve him, b'chol levavachem u'v'chol nafshechem. Remember, in the first paragraph, as the song goes, right? We should serve Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom al levavecha. Right? On your heart, singular. Similarly, we said, right? You shall love Hashem your God b'chol levavecha u'v'chol nafshecha u'v'chol me'odecha. That's singular, singular, singular. The second paragraph is now all in plural. Yes, Alan.
So if this were not English, if it were, let's say, Spanish or French, that distinction would be obvious.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. You know where else it's obvious? In Hebrew. Yeah. Hey, what can I say? The English, this is why, honestly speaking, this is why an English translation, while it's really, really good and helpful, can't pick up the nuances of the language. It just, it's not rich enough to handle it. The word Y-O-U, you know, it's just not strong enough word. In Hebrew, there's a switch. So I'll just give you a quick beginning of an answer. We can work on it, but this is important. Number one, it's one thing for the Torah to say to an individual, like we have in the first paragraph, that you need to serve God with all of your heart, all of your soul, and all of your resources. Because at the end of the day, the individual can say, you know what? I'm going to give it all I got. And if it turns out that I'm going to be, you know, now have to need something more for my own sake, I just, maybe I went too far with it, I know I have a community that I can count on. We're very much in the Jewish community. We think of others. I mean, that's why, you know, thank God we are known throughout the world as very benevolent people who give tremendous amount of resources towards causes. However, in the second paragraph, where God is now speaking to us in the plural as the community, you can't demand a whole community to utilize and use up all the resources. What's the fallback position then? If the whole community is going to be going above and beyond, then there's no resources. Well, that's going to put a more than just a strain, it really will topple the whole system. So perhaps the reason why the Torah leaves it out with all your resources in the second paragraph is specifically because it's being spoken to the community. It's in plural. To put that kind of strain and expect the whole community to do it, that's an unfair expectation and puts at risk. Individuals can do it. Now you say, well, obviously, if all individuals do it, there goes the community. But there's a different concept here. To obligate an individual to do everything that's in their power makes sense because that's a personal thing. But to demand it of an entire community, that's a little bit much. That's a little bit much. And therefore, perhaps that's the reason why we leave off that part about all of your resources. But more. One more piece. Let's take one more piece to this. Let's talk about for a moment, what does it mean in general to serve God with your heart? I understand your soul. We talked about that. Gesundheit. We talked about the fact that God says that for the cardinal sins in the Torah, you have to be willing even to give up your soul, to give up your life, right? We use the we pointed out to the greatness of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, one of the greatest leaders of the Jewish people, who unfortunately was killed and butchered to the Romans. So he fulfilled this verse to the best of his ability. He died al kiddush Hashem. He died sanctifying God's name. So we understand the idea that you can even serve God to the extent of giving up your life. Today is Yom HaZikaron in Israel. Today is the day of remembrance. How many unfortunate soldiers and people have lost their lives in defending our country and defending our right to exist, right? It's worthy to take a moment just to acknowledge that. But they died fulfilling that command of serving God with their soul. But how do you serve God with your heart? It doesn't mean because I think about doing something and then I don't do it. No, it doesn't fly. That's not the way it goes. But what it does mean, the Talmud asks this question and the Talmud gives a fascinating answer. The Talmud says the best way that we serve God with our heart is prayer. And at first blush, you should be shocked. Because most of us think prayer is a verbalization. We are articulating our acknowledgement of God, our request of God, our thanking of God. That's not your heart. That's your mouth. That's your lips. That's your voice. Says the Talmud, no, because a prayer without the heart is a husk without a shell without the fruit. You're missing the main point. Yes, it's true. Prayer needs to be verbalized. Prayer should be articulated. But if the heart, meaning the thought process, the emotional connection, the real sincerity that comes from within, then it's just words. You're just saying words and it's not your essence. Prayer is all about putting your kishkes. I don't have to translate, do I? Right? Putting your kishkes, that's your whole insides, your intestines, your everything. That's what prayer is all about. If the heart, which is the seat of your essence, is not involved, that's not real prayer. There is no mitzvah. I shouldn't say it that way. I don't work on God's accounting team. I can't say that. It seems to me that to get a full check in the box that says to pray must involve the heart, not just the mouth. Saying the words of, you know, without any thought. I mean, I can't even tell you. I'm embarrassed, but okay, I'm human. I have caught myself on more occasions than I would like to admit of where I find myself davening Shmona Esrei. I'm in, got my feet together. I got this all down. I've been saying it, thank God, many, many years. And I find myself completely off track. I have no clue where I'm up to. No clue. I find myself sometimes in the middle of Shema again. I'm like, how did I get there? Because I wasn't focused. I wasn't concentrating. I was saying the words, and then I'm lost. They tell a great story about I think he was a high school teacher. And at that point, the class had their own minion. They weren't together with the other school. Each one had their own minion. So the Rebbe, after they daven mincha, which is a relatively short prayer, but in the middle of it is the Shmona Esrei, those 18 blessings. And he comes over to a few of the boys right after davening. He sticks his hand out and he says, Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. And they're like, huh? What are you talking about? He said, I was watching you. Your mind must have gone around the world three or four times in that 5-minute period. Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Prayer by definition must invoke your heart. It must. That's the essence of it. And that's what the Talmud says. If you want to know about serving God with all your heart, make a real concerted effort on prayer. That's where it's at. That's serving God with your heart. Your soul, that's even to the extent of giving it up. Your resources, we talked about using that. But to understand how to serve God with your heart, there needs to be a focus on prayer. That's what the Talmud says. There's more to say about this, and maybe we'll pick it up again next week. But this is the paragraph. We need to talk more about the concept of the rains coming. There's an idea of how divine providence works with all of this, but we'll get there hopefully next week. Any questions? Gesundheit, Allison. Any questions? Feel free or forever hold your peace for a week.
I have a question.
Yes, Allison.
Are you going to be on Zoom forever? Because I went to see you.
There's nothing in this world forever. I don't know. I mean, we're certainly going to do it. We're certainly going to do it for the next few weeks until we finish the season. And then I take off for camp. Take off. I'm overloaded with camp. And then after camp, we'll revisit, sometime to start it up again. We'll see where everybody's at, where everybody's comfortable. We'll see. I make no more commitments. My wife has my one and only.
Can you make sure that the Beth Shalom website gets updated? Because it said that you were in person and I hadn't been in a long time. Yeah. So I was thinking that you were going to be there tonight. That's why I'm late.
Sorry, did not know that. I can send a message to them. Yes, I will send a message that it's been on Zoom.
Well, they know, but somehow it's still, I guess, in the weekly announcement or when you go to their webpage or something.
I'll check. I'll send a message to Rob.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Good to see you, everybody.
I was hoping you'd have a question because you had such a furrowed brow for a few minutes there. That I was like, I really hope she asked.
Well, I've been saving this throughout the whole class. I don't know if I misunderstood, but last week when you talked about mezuzah, and you talked about the parchment, that I thought you said that it was four paragraphs that were written.
That wasn't tefillin. Tefillin had four paragraphs.
Oh, okay.
The mezuzah has only these two.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for asking to clarify that. You don't get double credit
tonight.
You don't get double credit if you put four paragraphs in. It's not going to count. Not in your mezuzah. Fill in maybe. Yes, Fred.
All right. Well, then actually, I've got to admit that I was wrong in answering you. You said I pointed to the Shema a few pages, several pages earlier.
Right.
Which is what I thought I was supposed to be reading when I was told, don't forget the Shema and its three prayers. And I had only been reading the two paragraphs after it on that page. But then when you said, I started thinking, and then we turned, then I didn't find the paragraphs you were referring to as you started discussing this. So I ran to page 90, and I see the Shema is there again,
right,
with what are the true three paragraphs. Then what? That's what I should be reading.
Correct.
Every day, not the other.
Fred, here's my advice. Keep saying those three, and now add these three.
My little 12-minute morning prayer is getting up to 15.
What? I'll tell you a quick story, and then I promise I'll let you guys go. They tell a story about there were many yeshivos in Europe that each one had a certain focus. Whatever, I can get into another time. There were certain ones that were known as Musar yeshivos. They focused very much on character development. They did Talmud and all that, but there was a certain focus. So somebody once approached the dean, the Rosh HaYeshiva, the head of the yeshiva there. And he said, Rebbe, if I only have 15 minutes to learn a day, what should I do? He said, you should learn Musar. You should learn character development. He said, not study Mishnah, not study Talmud. I'm surprised you would say that. He says, no, do Musar. He says, why? Why that? He says, because if you learn Musar for 15 minutes and you really, really build on it and learn it, you'll come to realize you really have more than 15 minutes a day to learn. Brilliant answer. Brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant.
All right.
But yes, the paragraphs on 90 is the key. Those are the three. Those are really the key ones. All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you guys next week.